this is called the Oraculous or Archaeology Hotline. Okay, all right, here we go. We're starting in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Oraculous Horary Astrology Hotline. I'm your host, Michael A. Bryan, and joining me today is my wonderful team of astrologers and friends. We have Mr. Cameron Allen in the top. What is that? Is that the right or the left? Anyway, we have Mr. Cameron Allen on that side. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, what's up, Michael? How you feeling?
Doing pretty good. I'm super excited to be here recording our third episode.
Same.
How are you?
I'm great. Just chilling.
Good, good, good. We have Ms. Tracy Pacelli. Hey there, Tracy.
Hey there, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. My husband's watching football in the other room.
Awesome sauce. It sounds like a glorious Sunday indeed.
Absolutely.
And down below, we have Ms. Rasha Hassan in San Francisco. Hey, Rasha.
Hey.
How are you?
Hi, everyone. Good.
Hey. Good, good, good. And next to Rasha, we have Ms. Janae Anthony, who has the San Francisco Bridge behind her. But Janae, I know that you're in Chicago, yes?
Yes, I'm in Chicago, and I'm not sure how the background got where it is.
Okay, well, nice to see you, Janae.
You too.
So, everyone, this is our third episode of the Oraculous Horary Astrology Hotline, and I'm having a lot of fun at this. And, you know, for me, the biggest thing about coming here is about being here with these people who I know and love and who have studied with me over at the Oraculous School of Astrology. If you haven't already checked out the Oraculous School of Astrology, please go and do so, because we have a lot of amazing events. And as you can see, we bring together amazing and wonderful people. And I'm so happy to be able to be here with these wonderful astrologers who were wonderful astrologers even before they came to Oraculous, but who have taken the knowledge from Oraculous, this horary astrology, and have applied it into their lives. So go and check out Oraculous Astrology, and also check out the social media handles as well as the websites of these amazing astrologers that are going to be down in the description box below. And as always, if you haven't already subscribed to the Oraculous podcast and vis-a-vis the Oraculous Horary Astrology Hotline, which is brought to you by the Oraculous podcast, then please go and hit the subscription button followed by the notification bell so that you can receive notifications of when I bring you these podcasts every week. Now, everyone, we have a very interesting chart to dive into today. And Tracy, tell us what the question is for this client.
Well, she wanted to know what the clear path was for with regard to her career, and it involved a partner that she had as well.
Awesome. So the question essentially was, what is the clearest path for me in relation to my purpose? And how does my purpose play out in the unfolding of my current career situation? So essentially, the question was a career question that tied in this greater question of, what is my purpose right now? Where am I going? What is my sense of direction? What is my center of gravity? And so it seems on the level of the superficial to be a twofold question, but essentially these two things are deeply tied in with each other. Now, we know that within the birth chart, we go to our 10th house, which, depending on which house system you're using, your 10th house is either going to be your midheaven, or if you're using something like the whole sign houses, it tends to float around the top of the chart, around the upper hemisphere of the chart, that MC degree. But in the Regiomontanus house system, our 10th house is our midheaven, or it is attached to that degree of our midheaven. And we tend to look at our midheaven in terms of, how do I find recognition within the world? How do I find the ability to establish my sense within the world? And fundamentally, when someone says to me to reach to the stars, What star is it that I'm actually reaching towards? Well, within our nativity is that star that we try to reach towards is that star of our midheaven. Because from the landscape of the chart, our IC or the Imam Chali, the fourth house cusp, is going to be where we are rooted within the world, where we come from within the world, but to a very large degree, that midheaven is where we're going within the world. So in terms of viewing everyone as needing to fundamentally have both a sense of direction and a center of gravity, the midheaven serves as this magnetizing point that draws us to it. And in a lot of ways, it takes on this role of being our point of purpose, or how it is we're meant to find a sense of ourselves within the world around us. Now, Cameron, I know that earlier before we went on, we were having a bit of a discussion about this concept of purpose, and you had another concept that I found interesting. Can you tell us what that concept was?
Yeah, I mean, it's just from the lens of, like, when we think of purpose, a lot of times where we're at in the 20th century, or, you know, it's just like we think our purpose is like out in the world. However, for myself, and I'm always mindful that, like, in my chart, everything is below the horizon. So it's like, this could also be my interpretation. And I do take that into account when I'm looking at people's charts, like whether things are above or below the horizon. My purpose feels like it's like deeply internal. And from that internal space, I do go out into the world. So it's going to, yeah, it's like they belong together in some sense. But I do think I identify more with like my purpose being like internal. So, yeah.
Makes sense. Anyone else? Does anyone have another place in the chart that you may look to in terms of finding your purpose?
I think that the house that the sun is in could also point to purpose, because when you're serving your sun, right, the sun is like who you are on the inside to your core. And so I relate purpose a lot to what you are, who you are in your core, because if you're not doing something externally that's in line of who you are, then I feel like the purpose doesn't really add up. So I feel like those two things are interconnected.
Good stuff. Tracy?
Yeah, I thought that was great, Janae. That's basically what I was going to say. And just that, you know, the sun's path is more of a conscious awareness that we sort of strive to get to, but a lot of times we don't even necessarily realize that it takes a lifetime of experience to realize where we're headed. And that a lot of times we identify more with like the moon, but I always look at the sun as being like the purpose of awareness.
I'm happy that you all brought up the sun as a talking point. And on that same note, I want us to take into consideration the fact that the chart that we use within Western astrology, Western tropical astrology, is really a diurnal chart, or it's really a chart that follows the path of the sun, essentially. So if we think about the angular houses, or those four pivots of the ascendant, the descendant, the medium Chali, the Imam Chali, we're essentially talking about different points within the sun's journey throughout the sky. We have the ascendant being where the sun rises, the medium Chali being the sun at its highest elevation. We have the descendant as being the setting of the sun in the west, and we have the Imam Chali being this anti-culminating degree of the sun as the bottom of the chart in the fourth house. So if we view the chart from this solar perspective, we already have taken into consideration the supremacy of the sun as a luminary. But we also want to know, in a sense, where is the sun, quote unquote, strongest? Where does the sun come into the highest expression of its power? And it's for this reason, to a large degree, why the medium Chali takes on such a strong role in terms of being that point of a driving force towards external expression in the world, because that medium Chele, that mid-heaven degree, is essentially the sun's highest elevation within any chart, and that represents where the sun is at the height of his glory, essentially. So I love the fact that the two of you, Janae and Tracy, brought in this concept of the sun as being the core essence to a large degree. But I want us to expand this solar imagery and expand this solar allegory to the entire chart and realize that the entire chart has to do with the dispensation or the distribution of the power of the sun. And insofar as we're talking about the medium Chele or the midheaven, we're speaking about that place where the sun, i.e. that spark within all of us, finds its highest level of definition within the world outside. You see? Now, there's another thing that I think is important for us to bring up at this point, that while the luminaries do have this quote-unquote special meaning within traditional astrology, they don't take on the same sorts of meaning that they do within modern astrology. And I'm not saying that the traditional way is the better way to look at it, or the modern way is the better way to look at it, because I found value in both. So I found value in knowing that the sun in my chart rules a particular house, but I've also found value in knowing that my sun is in Taurus, and therefore maybe I like to wear scarves because Taurus is the neck. And so perhaps that's also my sun in Taurus thing, even though traditional astrologers may poo-poo on that and think, oh no, that doesn't mean anything. But the point is that I think that there's a place where these two things coexist. But when we're talking about horary astrology, we're largely talking about the astrology of the question, which doesn't really have the same supremacy of the sun in it as does natal astrology. So in natal astrology, yes, I can see more of this superimposing of my self identity onto the sun and wherever the sun is, because I think natal astrology lends itself more to that. But in horary astrology, when we're talking about the planets, we're not necessarily talking about them in terms of their universal signification, but we're talking about them in terms of what is their signification in this chart right now as rulers of various houses within this chart. So what we find is that when we switch our lenses into horary mode, we're really talking about the sun within a very condensed framework. And the condensed framework of solar language is, this sun is as important insofar as this sun has rulership over one of the houses that is important in order for me to answer this question. Do you see? But not necessarily this sun is important because it's the sun. It's more so, no, this sun is important because it's a career question and I'm asking a quote unquote 10th house question, and therefore the sun ruling Leo is going to be the significator of career within this chart, and where that sun is, I'll make judgments and I'll make statements about the nature of that career opportunity by virtue of the placement of the sun. But not this thing of the sun represents me within every chart, because now we're starting to blend things into each other that possibly don't really serve the fullest integrity of either system, natal or horary, when we do that. So just to say that, as we move into this lens of horary astrology, let's really be sure that as we interact with these planets, we interact with them as the potential rulers of houses that are significant to my question. And insofar as the planet is not ruling a house that's significant to my question, I can push it to the side, for all intents and purposes. Now, we do know that in horary astrology, the sun does a lot of other things, because maybe a planet is combust, or maybe a planet is Kazemi, or maybe a planet is under the beams of the sun or approaching combustion or separating from combustion. So we know that there are all of these solar considerations within a horary chart. But at the same time, if a planet isn't being afflicted by the sun in that way, or benefited by the sun in that way, we can leave the sun alone for now. But because you all want to talk about the sun, maybe we will take a look at the sun closer to the end of this, because who knows, you know, if a chart is going to say something to you, it's going to say it in several ways. So maybe our sun is going to reveal some information.
I thought you're going to address that the question is not clear, and then that you taught us to ask the client. I have them, like you said, three questions you have to ask the client to squeeze them into, like, what's really important for them.
Okay. So, in answering that question, Russia, this question ultimately ended up being, should I move forward with the specific career opportunity that's being presented to me now, and that I feel pressured to step forward with? That was essentially the question. Someone's pressuring me on the outside to make a particular move in terms of this career that is going to be my career regardless at the end of the day. This career is going to be mine. I know it's going to be mine. But at this moment, I'm not sure that I'm ready. So the real question at the root of it was, should I be moving forward with this career opportunity that I feel a little bit pressured to move forward with right now, even though within my heart of hearts, I'm not sure that I'm ready? That would have been the comprehensive question. However, the querent asked, what is the clearest path toward my purpose in relation to my career? Now, for me, as an astrologer in general, with over 15 years of working with clients, but also as a Hoary astrologer specifically, it's very frustrating when there is a clearer expression of a question within the heart of a person that they don't specifically speak towards. Now, we do have this three-pronged question-finding method that I teach my students at Oraculos and that I've also taught to you all. But at the same time, even with giving a client that three-tiered question method, what area of your life do you want to focus on? If you could fill in the general statement, I am seeking guidance on, what would your next word or phrase be? What question organically rises up out of you when you consider that general statement? Even in giving a person that three-pronged question distillation process that I've devised after 15 years of working with people and knowing that people have a difficulty finding their questions, we still get questions like, what is the purpose of this person within my life at this moment? When what the person really wants to know is this person the one? Or, I feel lost right now within the world and I don't know where I'm going. What is my true calling within this life? When the person really wants to know, I'm in a very stressful relationship and it doesn't feel like it's working, and is this person the one? So ultimately, we as people, and I dare say Western people, we have this way of moving around and with words that isn't always the most beneficial. You see? And we get so caught up within the dance of language that we have forgotten how to speak clearly. And so instead of saying something simple, we end up saying that today the precipitation is very high and therefore you should leave your house with extra protection because there stands a chance that you may be covered in moisture by midday, instead of just plainly saying, it's gonna rain, take an umbrella. You see? And in the same way as we get lost in the convolution of language just in our daily communication with each other, we also get lost within ourselves because of the complexity of language when it comes to really speaking straight and directly. Now, the flip side of this is that a reason why people don't like to speak directly, and I've worked with thousands of clients over my 15 years of practice, and I've seen it time and time again, that the reason why people do not like to speak directly is because they can't imagine that these feelings that they have are actually the feelings that they have. So instead of saying, this person is really stressing me out and, you know, this person is my partner, but they're really stressing me out and I'm not sure I'm ready for this. And therefore, what is the clearest path to my purpose? Instead of speaking in that manner, we want to cover it up because we want to, in a sense, make ourselves feel like, you know, more of something. But when you want to make yourself feel more of something, you're really not speaking from the clearest place of truth. You see? And I think that that is the most important thing ever. I had a client who's going through a very rough patch in their relationship. And the client said, I feel lost and I feel confused and I don't know where I'm going within my life. And I really need guidance as to what I'm meant to do on this planet. Which house do you find that in? And I was like, well, shit, you know, like, where do we actually go with that? But I did the reading all the same. But essentially, the question was blaringly obvious after I erected the chart that, hey, you really have your relationship on your mind and you're in a relationship that seems warlike and you have an antagonistic relationship with your partner and you don't feel very strong in the relationship that you're in and your partner probably doesn't feel very strong as well, which is why the partner is acting out. And are you sure you didn't really want to ask a relationship question? And then the answer was yes. However, no matter how much coaching I've given clients over the years, it always, a lot of the times, comes to clients asking the wrong question. Or maybe it's the right question asked in the wrong way. I remember another person came in wanting to know when will she meet her soulmate? And that seems like a pretty straightforward question. It seems like, oh, wow, okay, you want to know when you're going to find love. Cool, let's deal with it. But as we went into the reading, the entire reading turned into, well, what's going on with your dad? And is he really okay? And what sort of pressure do you feel as if you're receiving from him? And are you feeling anxious because of the relationship with your family? Do you feel as if you can't be your own person because of your family? And how does your family tie into the greater landscape of the question that you're asking? And when I asked her that, she was like, oh shit, I can't even ask a love question without them butting in. Because essentially, she felt as if her entire life was curtailed by her family. Her father made her feel extraordinarily guilty about every single thing she wanted to do. He made her feel extraordinarily guilty about wanting to move to live someplace else. And so she was carrying around this humongous burden of guilt within her heart in relation to her family that consumed and that overrode the question that she was actually trying to ask. So I think we should do an episode one day talking about when the universe overrides your question. Because it's something that I haven't heard a lot of horary astrologers talk about, because the pristine version of horary astrology that we hear about is the chart will be the answer to whatever question you ask. And it sounds very nice to say that. And it's a very clean and clear-cut and beautiful and pretty thought to think. But life is more complicated than that. And you can come into a reading with a question in your mouth, but have a completely different question in your heart. And so the larger question to be asked is, which of those two questions is this chart actually answering? And do I do a disservice to you when I answer the question that has come out of your mouth that is a different question than the question that is within your heart? But y'all ain't ready for that. So we're going to just push that to the side and pretend as if I didn't even bring that up. I'll probably cut that from the recording. And we're going to go into our chart for today, in which the Quarians is asking, how do I find the clearest path to my purpose in relation to my career? Do enjoy. Oh, was that nice?
That was, I love that. Because so many times, like in astrology, people are like, this is how you do this. And if the person asks this, then you answer the question and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, divination don't really even work that way. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what is, you know? And that's something that I think astrologers need to hear. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, instead of it being divination, we've turned it into like a psychology thing where it's like you come in and you sign this piece of paper and then and this is how you do it. You know, it's like, that was beautiful. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Russia?
Yeah, I would add one thing. I think I get this because I do hypnotherapy as well. I think that asking the person what's in your mind, what's happening while you're asking this question, it's like whatever the question you can ask, they get way more clear and they get more centered in their hearts to know what is really going on and what is the right question or like, what am I really looking for? So asking them is always good. It's like, this is what you want. Like affirming, is this is a question that you want to ask? Yeah, small clarification for the client.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when they ask a question, it seems like it's a snapshot of everything in the environment that's happening at the moment that they're asking the question. So I could see where things would just be looming large in the background that might have something else to do with the question that they're asking. And so it does make sense, you know, I guess to be able to explore that when you can.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that because like I also work with tarot as well. And you get a lot of the same stuff where people are asking questions, but it's not really what they want to ask about. And like one thing that you said that I was really resonating with was the fact like where people do these like verbal gymnastics to get around like what they actually want to say for the sake of avoiding vulnerability. And I think sometimes people are just very intimidated by knowledge and the truth. And that's like the reason why we tend to ask things where it's kind of inching in that direction, but not too much because do I really want to know this? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. You know, to what Russia said, you could question a client from here to the mountaintops, but if they want to be guarded with the real reason why they're coming and why they're asking their question, they will hold on to that. And it doesn't matter if you charge $180 for a reading or if you charge $500 for a reading and you feel as if, oh, charging more will cause someone to show up in a more serious way. If someone wants to protect something and if they feel at any level of their being that they're not ready to open that can of worms, they're going to protect it. And so what I found is that I still take the question, but then I allow the reading to tell me where to go. And I think that that is a level of grace and surrender that each and every astrologer has to take within themselves. That yes, you take that question in yourself, and yes, you go through the internal processes that you've learned through your rigorous training and the application of your skills over a lifetime of practice, but then something else has to come from deep within you, and that thing that comes within you to actually respond to their question is a thing that can see the bigger picture. And that's not something that you can learn, and that's not something that's even teachable, but it's something that you can guide students to searching for. Yes, you found the answer to this question. And then what is the bigger picture? What is the bigger framework within which this question fits? And that's something that I try to offer you as my students and all of my students in general, the ability to see through a microscope the specific thing that the person is asking about, but also the ability to see through a telescope the wider framework within which that person's question fits within the larger unfolding of their lives. So, without further ado, here is our chart of the day. All right, so here on the screen, we have the chart in which the querent wanted to know what is the clearest path to my purpose. And the information for the chart, for those of you listening to this on Apple Podcasts or any of our other audio-only platforms, the information for this chart is the 6th of November, 2020. at 9:09 and 34 seconds p.m. So you can tell that I pulled up the chart of the exact moment. So that is 9:09, 34 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Nassau, Bahamas. And that's something that I'm going to get into the habit of doing, giving you the chart information as well, so that if you're listening on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Anchor FM, you can pull up the chart yourself and follow us as we go through this. Now, the very first thing that we do within any horary chart, and I dare say within any traditional astrology chart to begin with, is we take a look at the ascendant. And we do a thorough analysis of the ascendant. What's going on there? What's impacting it? And how does that impact the larger unfolding of the question? So, Cameron, take it away. What do you see about this ascendant? And take us through the steps of analyzing the ruler of the ascendant.
Okay, cool. So the ascendant is Cancer. So we're going to find the moon because that's the ruler of the ascendant. And the ruler of the ascendant, the moon, is in the first house, and it's in its domicile, so it has internal strength there, but it's also in its own face, which, you know, it's like, I have this internal strength, but it's, to me, I guess I kind of look at it as, like, I'm pulling my last trick out of the bag to try to, like, survive or something, you know, that's the kind of feeling that it gives me when I'm working with it with Hori. And then also the moon is void here, and then the moon is out of bounds, which I still don't fully work with void and out of bounds, so I'm going to lean on everybody else to help me with that. But yeah, just it being in space and its own domicile, just it, yeah, it's an interesting feeling that it gives me. But anyway, so going to accidental, it is in the first house, it's an angular house, so it has 100% strength there, so that's still more strength again. And there's a few aspects, but I'm going to go declination. So from the declination table, we can see that it's tied in with the nodes. And the nodes here can represent like intimate connections. And it's also, it's contra-parallel. Well, it's parallel and contra-parallel, the nodes, but it's, and then it's parallel to the ascendant as well. So it's tied into the ascendant again.
Definitely. Cameron, now you went in full throttle, which is great. I enjoy it. And I wasn't even going to go that far, but since you went there, it is, yes, having that relationship to the nodes. Now, what you should know about the nodes is that if something is going to be contra-parallel one node, it's going to be parallel the other node. So I usually wouldn't take into consideration anything having a declination relationship to the nodes. However, her intimate connections with others do become a part of the delineation. So while I'm not going to hinge on that primarily, I will say that I think it's interesting that there is a deep connection with others or another within this situation that was really the fuel beneath the question she was asking. And yes, you are correct that it is parallel the ascendant, but also if we look, the moon is contra-parallel to Pluto, you see? And you know that for me, the distance between the moon and Jupiter is also relatively within range of the sort of orb I would give for declination. So here we have the moon essentially parallel to the ascendant, contra-parallel to Pluto, and contra-parallel to Jupiter. And I'll explain what all of that means to me now that you've pulled me out to talk about it. So next we have Tracy Pacelli. Tracy, anything else you want to say about this moon?
I would just say, because the moon is in Cancer in its own domicile, that she's really very much vested in emotional security type issues. And I would maybe bring in the fact that it's out of bounds, that, you know, she'd be willing just to go just to extraordinary lengths to sort of get that emotional security, which is of great self-interest to this client.
What we have coming up from you, Tracy, is the fact that the moon is essentially secure where she is and also deeply invested in that sense of security. as well as she is invested in going to great lengths in order to possibly maintain the sense of security that she currently has, or maintain a greater sense of security within the situation that she finds herself in. So here is my take. I love the fact that Cameron took into consideration the fact that the moon, while in domicile, is also in her own face, because within the reading that I did for this client, I didn't take into consideration the face component. That isn't the thing that gave me pause. The fact that the moon is at 27 degrees of her own domicile is what gave me pause, because there's something about being in the final degrees of any sign that should give you pause when analyzing a planet. But let's talk about the moon in domicile. We know from Bethem Santiloquium that a planet in its own domicile is like a king within his own castle. Because when you are in your own domicile, you aren't disposed of by anyone else. And I'm going to stick a pin right here and say that it is disposed of, not disposited by. When I hear people say disposited by, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Disposited is not a word. You will never find it anywhere. Nothing is ever disposited by anything. The moon would be disposed of, or disposed of by whatever planet, if the moon were in another sign that wasn't Cancer. But here we see that the moon has no dispositor. The moon in Cancer is essentially disposed of by the moon in Cancer. And so that nails in this imagery of a planet in its own domicile is like a king in his castle, because the king in his castle has the ability and the internal fortitude to effect change towards his own ends. The king in his castle that wants something to happen is far more powerful at allowing that thing to happen or enabling that thing to happen than the king in somebody else's castle. How are you going to affect your own ends if you're in somebody else's castle? If you're in somebody else's castle, you have to say, excuse me, sir, Mr. Other King, sir, can you please allow me to do this thing? There's a sense of having to ask permission, which is the relationship of being disposed of by another planet. While you yourself can go so far in the fulfillment of whatever your promise is, the ultimate fulfillment is caught up within that planet that disposes of you. And this is a theory that we find from Jean-Baptiste Mohan de Villefranche in his book, Astrologia Gallica, or French Astrology, in which he lays out a method of horoscopy, or a method of chart delineation, this concept that planets rely heavily on their dispositors, which is just traditional astrology in general. All traditional astrology says that a planet will rely on its dispositor. So here we have the moon that should technically be strong because of being in her own domicile. However, as Cameron pointed out, the moon is in her face while in her own domicile.
Yeah, I believe a planet in its own face is like a man on his last dying breath.
Yeah. Last dying breath is it. A planet in its own face is like a man on his last gasp, about to be thrown out of doors, or a family on its last leg without a successor of their genealogy, essentially. So what that means is that when you're on your face, you have the smallest shred of hope that you're hanging on to, because you realize that that is the smallest amount of power that you have within that space. So to be in your own face is to be essentially in a place where you're not really the strongest, and it is 1 degree of separation away from being Peregrine, essentially, because we know to be Peregrine is to be like a foreigner in a strange land. And actually, if we go to Guido Bonatti, Bonatti says that a planet in its own face is similar to a person who is a stranger in a strange land, who is allowed to be in that land by virtue of some skill or trade that he has. So essentially, we get this imagery wrapped up within our awareness of being in your own face, that to be in your own face is to not really be the strongest. and possibly to just be tolerated within the sign where you are, because you within yourself aren't having the sort of power to sustain yourself there. Now, this moon is in her own domicile. And as you know from me, an overarching good thing can diminish a tiny negative thing. In the same way as an overarching negative can diminish a tiny good thing. So the overarching good that we see here is we have the moon in her domicile. This person knows who she is. She knows where she's operating from, and she knows the energy that's at her disposal right now at this moment. She's in her own first house. She knows where she's established within the world. She knows the truth of her own potential. When you're in your domicile, there isn't a sense of pompousness that we might find if, say, you were in your exaltation, where you're like the fattest hen, essentially, and you're walking around stretching your chest because you want for everyone to see how big and how beautiful you are. So domicile doesn't have attached to it this sense of non-reality. Domicile is very grounded. I know who I am. These are my strengths. These are the limitations of my power. And I'm okay here. So we have the moon having a realistic understanding of who she is, period. However, the moon is at the end of her sign. So in my mind, I'm not even taking into consideration the moon in her face as being a major thing of my own consideration, because the overarching good here is that the moon is in her own domicile. However, the moon is at the end of the sign. Now, being at the end of the sign, Bethem and his Santaloquium, who I just obviously love, and we see the same thing coming up in the writings of Abraham Ibn Ezra in his book, The Beginning of Wisdom, in which he gives us aphorisms at the end of The Beginning of Wisdom. They both say that a planet that is in the final degrees of any sign is like a man about to leave the comfort of his own home to go on a voyage. So, to be in your own face has this energy of peregrination. To be in the last degrees of a sign similarly has the same energy of peregrination. Do you see? So no matter what way we flip it or reverse it, we still end up with this situation of the moon, while strong, being in a relationship to her own domicile where she is going to lose strength and quickly. Because we know that planets that are in angular houses and in cardinal signs, they move quickly. So here we have a moon that doesn't have that much longer in her own domicile of Cancer. And so she's feeling the anxiety of being at the end of her domicile, because she knows that she moves out of her domicile of Cancer. She moves into Leo, where she has a relative low amount of dignity, even though there is a medieval consideration that the luminaries, they have some essential dignity being in each other's domiciles. But that's another topic for another day. As far as our conception of essential dignity is concerned, the moon is going to be peregrine when she leaves Cancer and moves into Leo. And therefore, she's already beginning to experience some of the anxiety and some of the fear attached to that.
And also, mightn't she also be feeling just a lot of pressure just from that Saturn, just having such a close opposition to it, that something's already being squeezed and pressed upon her?
Well, you are running a bajillion miles an hour, but yes, you are correct, and we are going to get there right next. But don't spoil the journey. Don't give like the spoiler. Let's get there.
Yeah, I hate to read the end of the book first.
Coming from an author herself. So we have that going on. Now, the next thing that Cameron said that is potentially very intriguing to us is, yes, we have the moon having her parallel relationship to the ascendant, but the moon is also contra-parallel to that Pluto. So, speaking about being squeezed, Russia, talk to me about what sort of energy you think Pluto adds to the situation in relationship to the moon and how she's already feeling.
She's probably really feeling anxiety, tired, wants, ready to leave that the things that she's doing, she is kind of know by her heart, this is not for her anymore. That's, this is getting very hard, and wants to move ahead in a different venture.
Yeah, whenever I see Pluto, I always think of intensity. And so the moon being where it is, it looks like there's not really that many options left for this client to do or to choose from. And so like that mounting pressure might just be building and building. And there's like this push to do something, but it's like at the same time, like that anxiety around it as well.
Good stuff. Now, Cameron, I'll throw it to you just because I know you're the Pluto person. So go for it, and then I'll say what I have to say.
Yeah, from this lens, I was thinking like when, because I remember you saying that Pluto oftentimes can give the feeling of like a volcano erupting, right? So like even like she feels like she's at the end of this thing and she has to go somewhere else. So like that has maybe like been mounting, and something has to give. So it's all about to erupt. So she has to go into a different direction, and it just might not be a comfortable situation for the most part. That's the way I looked at it.
And ultimately, Trinae said the word of the day, pressure, pressure. And my grandmother has always said, pressure bursts pipe. And what that means is that too much pressure causes a pipe to burst, but it also causes people to burst, because that pressure is a mounting force of anxiety or a mounting force of intensity within you. And pressure, especially external pressures, cause us to feel as if we aren't in control of our own placement or of our own relationship to the thing that we're asking about. When Pluto moves through your life, it has a subterranean feeling, as if from underneath the surface of this ground, I'm being forced, or I feel as if I'm going to be attacked, or I feel as if something is going to come up and completely overwhelm me. And maybe it's already overwhelming you because you feel this internal pressure to become something that you probably aren't prepared to become. As we know the story of Pluto and Persephone, Persephone became a wife when she was quite happy being the virgin of the fields. And the movement of Pluto within all of our lives has that same thing. This sense of forced initiation is what we find when we find Pluto. Now, moving on. Let's take a look at the career of this person. And by career, I mean career slash purpose, but let us look at this from the perspective of career. Russia, talk to me about this person's career and do for me with the ruler of her 10th house, essentially what Cameron did with the ruler of the first house.
So the career, we're going to look at the 10th house, and that's the purpose as well that for her question. And we look at the ruler of the 10th is Mars. And Mars is in the 10th house, retrograding. So Mars in the 10th house is on the domicile. And in the 10th house, so it has 100% capacity to act. But it's retrograding in this case. And it's, as you taught us, it's like a man is in own castle, but sick. So can't see other people, can't be outside. So kind of, you know, not in his own real power.
So like going on to the accidental dignity portion of it, it is in the 10th house, which is an angular house, which means it has 100% capacity in an angular house.
Good stuff. Now, Cameron, the declination king, take a look at this Mars and talk to me about what interesting thing is happening with this Mars period.
Yeah, the Mars is contraparallel Neptune, and Neptune can bring a sense of like a tsunami coming. And also a lot of people like to say that Neptune can bring confusion and like blurriness. So it's like, I have a lot of power in a lot of different ways. And also I feel kind of sickly about it retrograde, and I'm kind of confused and blurry about it still. even though I do have all this power. So that's the way I looked at the declination there.
Great stuff. Because what we know is that the contra-parallel is akin, in a sense, to an opposition, whereas our parallel is akin, in a sense, to a conjunction. So here we essentially have Mars having an oppositional relationship to Neptune, even though on the surface it doesn't seem that way. On the surface, they don't even seem to be combined by aspect, which is why, my darlings, I would like for everyone to always pay attention to the declination table, because the declination table will show you planetary relationships that you didn't even know existed. We have this Mars at 15 degrees Aries, 33 minutes retrograde. And so yes, Mars is in his domicile and therefore should be able to deliver on the promise of Mars, which is a very important thing. And as we look at this chart, there's quite a number of planets that are in their own domicile. We have the Moon in her own domicile, Mars in his own domicile, Venus in her own domicile, Saturn in his own domicile, and all of them are angular planets, actually. So this is actually a great birth chart. Can I have this baby as my child? Anyway, there are some other things we don't like, though. But for the most part, it's looking pretty good. So we have the Mars in his own domicile. He should be able to deliver fully on his own promise. However, the Mars is retrograde. And the aphorism that Russia is referring to is that a planet retrograde is like a man infirm, stupefied, and solicitous, which is just any other planet retrograde. However, a planet in its own domicile retrograde is like a sick man in his own castle. So this Mars knows that it's powerful. It knows that it should be more powerful than it is. However, there are forces within the heart of this Mars itself that aren't allowing it to be great within the world. So is that within itself a seed of, yeah, I'm good, but there's still some more work for me to do over here? Or, yeah, I'm great, but I haven't quite gotten there yet, and I still need to truck it out a little bit more, and I still need to work a little bit more in order to bring myself over the hurdle of the burden of retrogradation. It's this whole thing of when a fisherwoman can't go out and catch fish, she stays home and she fixes her nets. So are there some nets that I need to stay home and fix in relationship to my career that haven't been fixed as yet? And will I find a clearer path to my purpose if I work on the things that need working on in order to prepare me to return to this career with a greater sense of strength within myself? Tracy?
Yeah, just getting back to that Mars contraparallel Neptune, that just being in the ninth house makes me think about the knowledge portion that she was interested in, whether she had enough knowledge. And so there's something a little bit unclear there. So there might be that she, and also the ruler of the ninth house, which is knowledge, that's in fall. So there might be something there, and that it involves a partner. Some knowledge that she still needs to get. And the fact also that I saw that Mercury recently squared Moon, it recently squared Saturn, the partner, that they might have been in conflict about some piece of knowledge or some sort of communication that they had.
Tracy, I love you. Anybody else?
I do remember when we did our analysis, because you said that the question that she has a partner in her work. So we did look at the seventh house, and we saw like the Moon, her, is separating from Saturn. So she's basically either having some conflict, pressured, and then moved, kind of like moving away from that partner. I think this is what we understand the question as well, that, you know, there is a partner and she doesn't know if she's going to go with that work, or she would, and then what is the clear of my path? So we talked about the seventh house being the ruler, Saturn. It's also strong in its own sign, and it's not retrograding.
I love what you said, Tracy, in relationship to the Mars and the Neptune and how you went to the house of her knowledge, which is where the Neptune is placed. So insofar as this question has to do with, do I know enough? We see the career already not in the best sort of situation by virtue of its retrogradation. It should be stronger, but it's not. And then we see the contra-parallel to the Neptune from the house of knowledge, the knowledge upon which you build your career. And the Neptune is saying, there's some confusion here. There is some cloudiness here. There are some murky waters here. And maybe the knowledge that you are needing in order to move forward with this thing that you're wanting to move forward with, maybe it hasn't settled or solidified into the proper thing yet. Because insofar as we see Neptune, we think about the middle of the ocean. And the middle of the ocean can hold no solid structure. The middle of the ocean is directly antithetical to the stable growth of a thing. So here we have Neptune standing centrally in the house of her knowledge, and it's saying, perhaps there is idealization regarding the knowledge that you have, or perhaps there's also a sense of a blurriness or a cloudiness or a confusion in relation to the knowledge that you have. And it doesn't say that you don't have knowledge, but what it says is that your relationship to that knowledge and that knowledge's relationship to the career that's built upon that knowledge, it's not operating from a place of strength that should allow you or that should enable you to feel as if now is the right time for you to move forward with the question that you have in mind. You see? Now, going to the point that was made about the Jupiter being in fall in the seventh house. Yes, the Jupiter is in fall. And the Jupiter is in fall applying to the conjunction of Pluto, but also parallel to that same Pluto within 33 minutes of arc. So here we see that there is a Jupiter-Pluto relationship between the knowledge that she has that's in fall, but the knowledge applying to Pluto, which has a feeling of, but I'm being forced to bring it out of myself anyway. Regardless of the fall sort of situation I find myself in relationship to my knowledge, I am being forced to bring this knowledge out of myself anyway. And it doesn't matter what I think about it. It doesn't matter whether or not I think I'm ready, but my environment is forcing me to show up with this knowledge that is in fall, this knowledge that I don't think is really operating at a level where it should be operating in order for me to do this thing that I'm asking about. And this knowledge that I know could use a little bit more sprucing up. Not only that, we see that the last aspect that this Jupiter would have made would have been Jupiter's separation from that same Neptune in the ninth house and Jupiter's application to that Pluto. So it's as if from a separation of confusion or from the realization that this knowledge that I have within myself may be confused, it may be blurry, it maybe needs to grow some more legs. It's probably still in its embryonic phase. It probably isn't ready to be shown to the light of day, to then apply to Pluto, which is, but you better show it anyway. It says that here is a situation in which this thing, this seed that's growing within me is being forced to ripen before its time.
I would like to add one thing that this Saturn and Moon is squared by Mercury and is again knowledge and information, and that Mars in 15 degree is in the terms of Mercury. So there's a lot emphasizing of the knowledge and information that she needs to put together.
Correct. Now, once again, I wouldn't have necessarily gone to Mercury as the universal significator of knowledge, just period. However, this Mercury is important. And the Mercury is important because this Mercury is the planetary hour ruler. Do you see? Mercury is the planetary hour ruler of this chart. Here's where you see that. So we have the planetary hour ruler being the Mercury, which already is saying to us that we need to see where the Mercury is placed and what's going on with that Mercury, because that's going to give us more information. What does that Mercury rule? Well, Mercury is ruling the third house and the 12th house. And what might that mean, Tracy, for this Mercury to be ruling the third house and the 12th house?
Well, it's ruling information. It's ruling self-undoing.
It's ruling information. It's ruling my foundational knowledge, my foundational education that I have within this world, because we consider the third house to be the house of foundational education. And it's also ruling the 12th house of my self-undoing. And here we see this Mercury is combining those two houses, because once again, if we take a look at the work of Jean-Baptiste Mohan, Jean-Baptiste says to us that when a planet rules multiple houses, it unifies the meanings of those two houses within itself. So Mercury unifying the third house and the 12th house is saying, this knowledge that I have may be tied in with my self-undoing. And this knowledge that I have that's tied in with my self-undoing is fundamentally having an antagonistic relationship between me, the querent, i.e. the moon, but also with the Saturn, i.e. the potential business partner, who we still haven't spoken of yet, but the potential business partner. You see? So Mercury is being a bridge, in a sense, between the moon and the business partner, even though we know that the moon moves faster. So technically the moon is essentially being a bridge between the Mercury and the Saturn. And she already has been that bridge because the moon has separated from both of them. However, we see this deep interrelationship of the moon, the Mercury, the Saturn, and none of it looks good because the moon and the Saturn are in opposition. Now, Cameron, talk to me about this Saturn from the perspective of the Saturn being the potential business partner who she's wanting to move forward with.
Okay, yeah, so the business partner, since Capricorn is in the seventh, it's in its own domicile, so the partner has their own internal strength as well. And if I'm not mistaken, 26, so that, and it's also in its own term, I believe. Saturn is its own term there in Capricorn.
Yes, you are correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I forget the terminology for a term, but it does give more strength there as well. But since it's opposing the moon, it's like the strength of the partner and then the strength of the querent, they're opposing each other, so that's not good. That's the way I like tied it in for the most part. And then also it's the anaretic planet, so that sucks.
Tell us why you say Saturn is the anaretic planet.
Okay. So anaretic planet is the planet that rules the eighth house. And I forget what like the technical meaning of anaretic means, but it's just like the death of a thing, essentially, is the way that I experience it. So yeah, that's not the greatest when you want to partner with somebody and they're a death of a thing.
Correct, Cameron. So some of the things that Cameron mentioned was the fact that the Saturn is in his own term in Capricorn, in his domicile in Capricorn, but also in his own term there. And we know that the terms of Capricorn, if you've memorized them, which I teach my students at Oraculos to do, to memorize the terms, the first 6 degrees of Capricorn is the term of Venus, then up until 12 degrees of Capricorn, we have the term of Mercury, then up until 19 degrees of Capricorn, we have the term of Jupiter, then up until 25 degrees of Capricorn, we have the term of Mars, and then up until the 30th degree of Capricorn, we have the term of Saturn. So here we have Saturn in his own term, which I wouldn't even bring that in too strongly because Saturn is already in his domicile. So how much stronger do we need him to be? But a planet in its own term is a planet that shares more in its own complexion, or that shares more in its own corporature. So Saturn in the term of Saturn becomes more Saturn-y. Do you see? Mars in the term of Mars becomes more Mars-y. The moon in the term of Venus becomes the moon with a Venusian something. Mercury in the term of Jupiter becomes Mercury with a Jupiterian something. It's a coloring that the planet takes on. So if we thought that the business partner was a pressuring individual, period, he's even more pressuring by virtue of being Saturn in his own term, because he's the most Saturniest version of Saturn that has ever Saturned, essentially. And that version of Saturn is very demanding, because it demands that you show up and do your duty, and do your duty well. And essentially, we have the moon here in an oppositional relationship with that Saturn, saying that there's wrangling and jangling between these two people. That's a term that we find in William Lilly, and it's also mentioned within other authors in the 17th century, that planets that have an oppositional relationship and no reception between them indicates wrangling and jangling between them all the days of their lives. And here we have them both having this same relationship. So it doesn't seem as if it's a positive thing. And Saturn, as Cameron also said, is the anaretic planet in this chart. Now, the word anaretic comes from the Greek anareta, which I know because I had a Greek student once. Yota, if you're listening to this, hey, Yota. And Yota said that the word anaretic, coming from anareta, means the devourer, or that which devours, or that which destroys through consumption. And here we have Saturn, naturally a malefic planet, also ruling naturally a malefic house. Truthfully, the seventh house is technically a malefic house as well, insofar as the seventh house represents your open enemies. But even if we push that aside, Saturn is a malefic within itself, and a malefic even further, because Saturn within this chart is the planet within whom the promise of death is indicated. And if we don't want to say the D word, Saturn within this chart is the planet within whom the promise of anxiety is indicated. And here we have the moon in opposition to the Saturn, which is showing that whatever the Saturn represents is probably going to be something that makes you feel forced, or that makes you feel compelled, or that makes you feel as if you have to do, or you have to show up, or you have to get something done. Now, Tracy, talk to me about the fact that the ruler of the ninth house is essentially in the seventh house.
So the ruler of the ninth house, which is knowledge, resides within the partner, and it's in fall. So there's something very damaging there going on with the knowledge that the partner has.
Well, good. But it's also not necessarily the knowledge that the partner has. This is specifically the knowledge of this querent, you see? So what this is saying with this Jupiter, which is ruling the knowledge of the querent, being within the partner's own house, is saying that the partner is having a monopoly over the knowledge that this person has. And the partner is essentially squeezing and forcing the knowledge that this person has in order for this knowledge to do something that it is not yet prepared to do. We see the Jupiter applying to the Pluto, which is having that same sort of feeling. We see the Jupiter-Pluto by parallel in our declination table, which is having that same sort of feeling. And here we see the Saturn caught up within that entire situation, that this partner is overly involved in the knowledge that this person has. And by virtue of this partner's over-involvement, this partner may be a part of why this person is feeling as if she's in a position to force herself to do something with that knowledge before it's time. So we see this concept of being forced to do something before your time showing up by virtue of the Mars being retrograde in the 10th house, ruling the 10th house. the Neptune in the ninth house, as the basis of one's knowledge, and the Neptune being in a contraparallel relationship with that Mars, i.e., there is something within the basis of this person's knowledge system that's fundamentally undermining their career's ability to be great at this moment, or the career that they're speaking about ability to be great at this moment. So that's another indication that the knowledge base is faulty, or the knowledge base is being forced, and it isn't supportive to the sort of strides that the person is wanting to make. But we also see this through the Mercury relationship. Mercury's relationship to the moon, Mercury's relationship to the business partner, and Mercury's rulership of the third house as well as the 12th house. That the foundational knowledge that I have within my life and within myself is tied in with my self-undoing. And that fundamentally is a part of the story of friction between me and my business partner at this moment. Now, this Mercury is also ruling the business partner's third house, which is the business partner's own knowledge. So, Trinae, with that Mercury ruling the business partner's own knowledge and in a square relationship to both the business partner and the moon, what might we say about that?
Yeah, I was looking at that and I was thinking that, like, there might be some sort of like expectation put on the client from this business partner to like perform in a way that they might not necessarily think they're ready for. The business partner's 10th house contains the Mercury. And so like the Mercury is kind of the central story here. As I'm trying to say that, like, there's a lot of contention between who knows what and who's expected to know what and who's expected to perform in a certain way is what I'm picking up on.
Exactly. Tracy?
What I also noticed is that Mercury being in Libra, that Saturn receives, in other words, like benefits from the Mercury, where it doesn't seem like the moon is getting any benefit from Mercury. There's no reception there.
Tracy? Yes. Very good observation. Now, the other thing, if we were to look at this chart from the perspective of the seventh house being the ascendant of the business partner, then yes, we do have this fourth house cusp being the business partner's career. And notice that the business partner's career seems to be doing that much better than the querent's career. The business partner's career is in domicile and strong in an angular house. The querent's career is in domicile, but retrograde and contraparallel to that Neptune. So the business partner's career doesn't seem to be the one that's suffering. And there's nothing worse than having someone in your life who's not suffering, who tells you, go do something that you know that you're not ready to do. And they're completely caught up within, oh, look at my life. Don't you see how good things are going from my vantage point? Why don't you just stop suffering? Why don't you just turn that suffering tap off and try to have a career like the one that I'm trying to have, or the one that I envision? And yeah, like, listen to my knowledge, my ninth house ruler, i.e. that Mercury. Disregard the fact that my ninth house ruler is your 12th house ruler, which means if you listen to me, you're actually going to end up in the doghouse. But listen to my ninth house ruler and do this thing. Eat that apple. You go and be great in the world. And poor moon, about to move from her own last gasp into a house where she has no dignity, whereas homeboy over here, the business partner, is going to move from one domicile to the next. So, sweetie, don't do it. That's all I have to say. Because this person, this Saturn person, as Saturnian as he is, all he looks like is a bag of pressure. And in the words of my grandmother, pressure bursts pipe. And he can afford to look like a bag of pressure moving from one domicile to another domicile, with his career looking as beautiful as it does, with his own wisdom applying to the part of fortune. He looks great. But in this partnership, you don't feel great. And insofar as you don't feel great and you feel pressured and you feel forced to do something far beyond the point of your own readiness, you should listen to that thing. Because it doesn't make any sense to force yourself to be somewhere or do something before it's time. And one of the pressures of living in the 21st century is that we all feel squeezed in a sense by time, especially this year. We've all felt squeezed in some way in terms of time because we realize how precious time is. But as a result of realizing the preciousness of time, if you within yourself feel as if it's appropriate for me to move slowly and accumulate and savor each moment so that when I show up, I can actually be ready without having to be forced to be ready, then you do that. Because what comes out of you at the end of the day becomes far better in terms of the quality and the consistency of the service that you provide versus anything else that you can create if you force yourself to do something and you know that it's not your best. Does that make sense? And that's about it for this chart today. I hope that each and every one of you had a wonderful experience looking at this with us and that you'll tune in next time to the Oraculos Horary Astrology Hotliner.
Wait, so what was her clearest path?
Her clearest path was to study more. Go back to school, study more. This thing that you're wanting to move forward with, which was fundamentally, she wanted to move forward with a very specific astrology-based career path. And there was a partner who was pressuring her into the direction of moving forward. But as each and every one of us here know, reading a chart isn't just something that drops out of a tree, you know? Astrologers, like really good astrologers, don't just drop out of trees. That's something that we have to sit down and develop within ourselves. And especially, I think 2020 is showing a lot of self-trained astrologers that there are educational opportunities out there for them to take advantage of. And as a result of that, the advice to someone wanting to step boldly forward in an astrological career is to, hey, are you ready? Because if you're not ready, we got you. If you're not ready, there's support for you within this community. There are schools within this community. There are brilliant teachers within this community. You can plug into that and you don't have to feel forced to show up in the world as an astrologer. If you within yourself know that to do that would be disingenuous and that to do that would be untruthful, essentially. So the answer was, you know what your own knowledge base feels like within you. Listen to that voice within yourself and sharpen yourself up some more so that when you truly make your debut, you can make your debut feeling strong and confident and certain about the foundations upon which your knowledge is built.
And you can get in touch with the Horary Hotline when you need some help.
Yes, you can get in touch with the Oraculos Horary Astrology Hotline whenever you need help or assistance. Well, everyone, that is it for today. I hope that you enjoyed yet another episode of the Oraculos Horary Astrology Hotline. This is something that we're going to keep up. I truly enjoy having the opportunity to be here and share Horary Astrology with you all. I used to try and do it by myself. And then I was like, Michael, you know, you like company and you need people. And more than just liking company, I love people who have trained with me because we speak the same language. We come from the same lineage. And it's that much easier to speak with my wonderful students and friends and astrological colleagues who have passed through my hands over at the Oraculos School of Astrology. So if you want to study Horary Astrology with us or any of the other amazing things that we offer, please do go and check out www.oraculosastrology.com. And also subscribe to the podcast. share it with the other people in your life who want to get into horary, and also stay tuned so that you can see how this wonderful project continues to grow with these wonderful astrologers. So, until next time, I'm your host, Michael A. Bryan, and these are my lovely, lovely friends and people who I adore, and we're all leaving you in love and peace and hope. Until we meet again, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye. Until next time.
You all are awesome. We did that.
All right. Woo.
I feel way more confident after that, honestly. That was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
It feels like it gets better and better.
Yeah.
The more we get to practice and do.
It does.
And learn.
So I'll be sending you all the next chart for the next time that we meet together. And I'm really happy to do this. And yeah, thank you all for being here. It means the world to me.
Yeah, we really appreciate that you're producing this. We know how busy you are. So, you know, we love you, Michael.